Hello, welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. I am Jason. And for your listening pleasure, I have Joda and Angel with us today too.
So, hello.
Hi.
Hello. Joda is at AS0Trance and Angel is at Angel on the Eighth Day. And Joda has a beautiful bridge of astrological and astronomical information for us. So we're going to be talking about Scorpio since it's Scorpio month now. And Angel, of course, is a wonderful all-around psychic-y, clairvoyant-y, counselor-y type of individual. I can't even put you in a category, Angel. You're just uncategorizable. So
I feel like that's been my whole life.
Right? No boxes for you.
No.
No boxes for you, Joda, either. I don't want to box anyone in. So October 23rd, so it looks like November 21st for Scorpio. So the beginning of this Scorpio season. We're going to do a brief show, and then we'll be back with more in-depth stuff, and we're going to be breaking down the show a little bit differently as we go along, but we'll have all the great information and stuff for you guys. So keep joining us here. We appreciate you being here. Anchor.fm/Cosmic Eye if you'd like to make a donation. Do check out also Angel's shop. It is the holiday season now at Angel on the Eighth Day on Etsy for crystals, prosperity beans, and other cool stuff he's going to be putting up. And then we have our Cosmic Eye Tarot shop on there as well. So let's get into Scorpio. As I said, so Scorpio, of course, the water sign, October 23rd to November 22nd again. A very kind of emotional sign. We'll talk more about that in a minute, and we'll talk about some of the qualities of the sign. I don't know if you guys had prepped anything. We may just kind of go off this this old chart I've got. Did you guys prep anything before we started, or
should we just a bit? We pulled up some information to just kind of go over some, like, you know, quick bites about like each little part of the first through the third decan, and then I don't know if you'd want to break down each one in terms of like the decan one, decan two, or just do like the decan one for now, since that's what's prevalent.
Yeah, let's do that since it's okay. The beginning and stuff. That makes sense because we don't have a ton of time. I know you guys are pressed. So yeah, do you want to start that? And then we can kind of just go over the general stuff for Scorpio after you introduce that.
Yeah, for sure. So what we were kind of thinking is, like I said, we have some like quick little facts about each one. I know that we're not going to like dive into each individual one, but at least that can kind of give the listeners something to look forward to.
Yeah, for sure. I love it.
Do you want to go?
Yeah, that's your sign to go.
Angel apparently missed his cue to jump in there. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So the first Scorpio decan is born between the 23rd of October and the 1st of November. And they are ruled by Pluto. The planet bestows outer coolness and an inner passion and ambition. I'm trying to see where the people that I know land on. People born between 2nd of November and 11th of November are considered to be in the second Scorpio decan, and they are ruled by Neptune. The planet bestows upon them artistic talent and a bit of shyness. Scorpio's third decans are people born between the 12th and 21st of November, and they are ruled by the moon. Moon showers unlimited charm on one's personality.
Do you want to go over this one?
If you want, or yeah.
Okay, so I guess then we'll just kind of jump into a little bit more about the decan one. So that's October 23rd through November 1st. The first decan of Scorpio is known as the Week of Power. The first 10 days are the most potent personas that are considered to be full Scorpio. Because of that unrestrained vigor. Okay, Scorpio decan one could appear at the top of a mount or the depths of hell. However, it entirely depends on the enclosure they are kept. Others you see as still collected and at times calculating. You have the potential to control circumstances and people in an apparently sensible and cool-headed manner. However, underneath your calm surface is a fire and passion, and this is your strong driving force to achieve what you really want in life. And then we can kind of go into how Pluto actually affects it.
Yeah, please. That'd be super cool.
Do you want to read like the first part and I can read the second?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so Pluto of this decan is Scorpio's most rising and famous. Most of what's discussed so far relates fully But there is more. Scorpio's set disposition endows you with incredible tenacity. When you set out to do something, you will persevere in the face of adversity before you eventually achieve it. This resolve is aided by the cardinal sub-influence of the first decan, which can provide you with the stamina, energy, and desire to keep going. Excuse me. To begin with, Pluto was discovered in the 1930s. For thousands of years, astrology has helped people understand Scorpio through the planet Mars. Pluto's influence on an individual disposition is comparatively small, and it distracts observers from seeing the heart of their real beat. Might as well just do that. That will be their active Mars aggression, the constructive driving force inside them. At the same time, Pluto's significance cannot be overstated, particularly because Pluto is and will remain in Scorpio Decan 1 for the future.
Sweet.
I think you would probably know more about how those things influence the... We were talking about that a little bit last time, right? How the positions are depending on when the person is...
Mm-hmm. Whenever you're born, so your longitude, latitude, time, place, et cetera, will determine which decan you fall under. And that has a lot to do with like where, what planet was closest within that position. So for a lot of it, people that are born within the first decan, it used to be Mars was always known as something that was always related to Scorpio. And then as they studied more into it, they had realized that there was a lot more of like where Pluto being so far away actually had a stronger influence on it. Hmm. I've always kind of looked at it as like, so they always reference a lot of the more icier planets. So like Neptune, Uranus, Pluto, in relation with Scorpio is something I've noticed. But what I've always thought is Mars was always kind of like the main thing. But I think that Mars is the outer part. And then the inside would almost be Pluto. So it looks and appears strong and cold and calculated, but inside it's beautiful. Because Pluto, if you look at an image of Pluto, it's known for having a huge heart on it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is very interesting. And that, so it's, the other thing too is like, looking at this, so Scorpio is connected to the death tarot card. And Pluto, of course, has to do with the underworld. The ancient god of the underworld is Pluto. And there's this idea of sort of, regeneration or regenerative forces. And then of course, like Scorpio rules the genitals. It's connected to Kundalini energy and a lot of sexual energy and things like that. So, right. So you get this kind of connection between death and sex and regeneration, life, birth, death, all these kinds of things that are kind of caught up in Scorpio as well. It's one of these very, I don't know, for lack of a better word, like very Kundalini oriented kind of signs.
They
have a lot of powerful energy that can go either way, and I think that's why they're sort of emotional and passionate, and they can be up and down, and you know what I mean. It's like
they're very intense in what they want to do. Of all the Scorpios I've ever known, it's when they have their mindset on something, whether it's a relationship, a job, you know, anything, they're extremely driven to get that accomplished. And sometimes that can mean slashing down other people you may have in your life in order to achieve that. And that's kind of something I've always noticed Scorpio is they tend to be slightly, I don't want to say selfish, but they definitely have their priority first.
That sting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sting for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, what's interesting is one of the other qualities that they have is they're very idealistic. And if you think about how when you're super idealistic or super oriented towards some kind of ism or idea, that you can justify kind of the ends justify the means a lot of times.
Yeah, because definitely.
Right? Do you know what I mean by that? It's like, yes. It's, so I think that they have to, like, that's if you have that kind of Scorpio nature, that kind of influence in your personality, it's important to look at and make sure that like, the thing you're really gunning for, the thing you're really shooting for, make sure it's not harming other people and it's just kind of your ego that's like pushing you in that direction. So that's one thing that I would look at.
Yeah. With this breakdown, and as I reflect on the Scorpios that I know, it makes sense because you know how like Mars has the essentially the male symbol, right? That's what represents Mars. So yeah, that's a lot of like masculine sexual energy. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the Scorpios that I know kind of exude that externally. Oh, yeah. But then when you start kind of peeling back some of those layers, you realize that they're really just seeking love, but it's like this misdirected way of getting there. Because at the core, you see this emotional person that's just protected by like this fiery energy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
They're very like mushy.
That makes sense. It's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and the interesting thing about that is also that the sign technically is like, if you look, is a feminine sign, but you're right. There's like that masculine fiery kind of energy, even though they're a water sign, they have a different kind of a quality or energy to them. And I think that scorpion stinger really has kind of a pretty good symbolic connection to them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, Pluto, that's such an interesting...
Another thing that's kind of interesting about Mars, and this just hit me, because I was like thinking, I'm like, well, Mars has two moons, and I was like, I could have swore that one of the moons had something to do with like rejection or fear or strength or something like that. So I just looked it up to confirm that. I was close. So Mars has two small moons, Phobos and Deimos, I think is the way it's pronounced. So Phobos in Greek actually means fear, and Deimos means panic. It's almost kind of like that's what orbits around the presentation that Scorpio likes to portray to those they actually meet. But inside, it's actually the fear and panic that's constantly circling around them, which can also kind of make you make poor decisions in terms of how you approach certain things, i.e. being overly sexual with your intentions right up front, rather than just showing your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Or using that maybe in an inappropriate way when really what you're seeking is a connection, a love or a friendship connection, but the sexual part of it kind of creeps in there. And I think, you know, maybe is used for, I don't want to say manipulation, but like maybe it's a defensiveness or a fear. Like you said, it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know any other way to relate to someone. So this is what I'm going to use.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah. The fear and panic, you know, orbit you, assume you.
Well, and then in the further breakdown, it said, I think you mentioned this, right, that it's lower it or go up, that it says...
Oh, this part right here.
Yeah, that the Phobos and Deimos were named after the horses that pulled the chariot of the Greek war god Ares, the counterpart to the Roman war god Mars. So Mars, if that is something that is pulling you, then are you making... again, like how I was describing before, like misguided choices or a misguided path based off of these insecurities, which are like fear and panic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what is like literally driving this war god.
Yeah.
No, for sure. But that's, I think when you have that under control, much like when you have like that Kundalini energy within under control, like you can really channel that into powerful activity and a very like charming personality. You can be very magnetic and, you know, kind of be a strong leader. I feel like there's like a lot of actors and artists are Scorpios, you know, because they've got that such strong feeling. You know, and then when I'm kind of looking at this list and like there's I've got a list of, it's older, what kind of list, but I feel like Julia Roberts is on here, Leonardo DiCaprio, Hillary is on there. Hillary Clinton, yeah.
Dean Harry.
Yeah, like let's see who else is on here. It's like, oh, Charles Manson. There you go, there's a crazy one. but then like Martin Luther, so you know, like a religious reformer, like super just like we said, like someone who's like super gung-ho and like idealistic and, you know, will stop at nothing to get their, you know, their message out there, right? People like that. So there were like artists like Rodin and Carl Sagan's a Scorpio.
Oh, I love Carl Sagan. Duh.
So there you go. Right. So there's someone with their good Scorpio energy under control and directed into positive stuff. Right. Martin Scorsese.
Okay.
I think what's also interesting about Scorpio is they are Scorpios tend to, as we just discussed, tend to be rather successful or driven in whatever they do, whether they become a celebrity open up a business, or like the most ideal partner or ideal friend, whatever they decide to do, they're super headstrong about it. And usually people that achieve those things, they do it with their own fruition. They make it happen themselves. They don't usually rely on other people to continue to hold them up as they achieve their dreams. And Scorpions don't live together and they don't nest together. So they are very individual.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that. So they don't.
Yeah, I was like thinking, I'm like, you know, every time I've ever seen a scorpion outside, I never see its friend.
Like ants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ants are always like in and a little. Bees, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I never, by the way, have you ever seen either of you a scorpion in Las Vegas? I never saw one in Las Vegas.
Oh, yes.
I think they're mostly on the southwest side.
So in Henderson.
Yeah, maybe the southern region.
Like in Green Valley Ranch, that's where, when we first moved to Las Vegas, that's where we ended up moving, which is pretty much south as south you can go.
Yeah.
They had planted a whole bunch of palm trees everywhere in the area. And as you know, Vegas tends to kind of stick with the same Adobe color scheme. So yeah. Our carpets were kind of like a light-ish color. We ended up having a scorpion infestation in our house because of the palm trees that were surrounding the area. It took months to get rid of them. You would go take a shower, one would crawl out of a drain. You'd be walking on the carpet, and the only reason you see something move is because it just darted right across real quick. But you would always have to like watch out where you see them. Nowadays, though, I think the last time I saw them was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I haven't really seen a whole lot or ever.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like they kind of decimated the scorpion population, and it, you know, it hasn't really come back because they're not even here in Arizona either. And they used to be everywhere. Like Arizona was lousy with scorpions. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I've heard people like in the southwest side,
like Southern Highlands.
More like, what is that? Mountain's Edge.
Yeah.
I've heard people in that area often.
Still out there. Yeah. Joda, that sounds like a horror movie to me. I'm not even kidding. Like it's just an infestation of those guys. I don't know, like I'm not really very squeamish about bugs and things like that or insects, but like scorpions are kind of creepy to me. It's guys like,
which was like find the like really creepy earwigs.
Really? Oh, I hate them. They're gross. Not
fun. Yeah. I don't like
them. I can handle them, you know, I'll take care of it, but if there's a cockroach. Like, so last month I went to go take the trash out and take the dog outside with me. Yeah. And I'm about to walk back inside. And this huge bug that was cockroach that was at least 2 inches and at least inch thick is sitting right in front of the sliding glass door. And I panicked and jumped on top of the table and called Angel. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I need help. Can you please help me? I don't know what I'm going to do. I need to come out and kill it.
It was literally perched up on top of this picnic table. Just like the fear. Yeah. It was hilarious.
Oh my god, it sounds like that thing was menacing you. It had a purpose. It was
it had a vendetta against me. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
On the flip side of that, you rescued two bees at Huntington Beach.
Well, bees are important, and I know that, like, so I got stung by a couple of them when I was a kid, so I just naturally have this like fear of them, but I know how important they are to our environment. So if I see a bee that's like struggling or like in a pool, or as Angela just mentioned at the beach, there was a couple that were stuck in the sand.
Nice.
I will try to pick them up and help them, because I know that as long as you're not showing aggression towards them, they generally don't do the same back. They'll usually just leave you alone.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're totally on target about bees and their necessity. I'm right with you there. I've saved a couple bees myself lately. So
yeah,
we had like
less bees.
We found these loose feathers that were just kind of chilling in the beach, and then we're like slowly brushing. It almost felt like what are those people? Archaeologists.
Oh yeah, totally.
We were like gently like removing the sand grains from like the bees' eyes and the wings.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it. You guys did some good work. Thank you for your service.
You're quite welcome. Let me know when you need us again.
I would actually love to have a hive of bees. Really, one of these days when we get our space that we want with a bit of land, we're gonna have all that stuff.
I would love that.
So.
Or just those little the bee gardens where they have water with marbles.
Yeah, that's really important.
Yeah,
and
hummingbirds.
Yeah, the pollinator gardens are really important for all that stuff coming through, and even the butterflies and stuff as well will be attracted to that.
Oh, did we? I don't think we told you about the moth.
Oh yeah,
Margaret.
Was it Margaret? Was that her name?
Yeah. Okay.
See, I remember.
So she finally hatched, and then Jonah's like, "Oh, I think we lost her." So there's like a moth roaming around the house, and you know how many closets I have, and I'm like, "That can happen."
Oh no, I know. Well, because we went out of town, and so I didn't think that she was gonna hatch or anything, because her cocoon was barely done when we left. We came back to check on her, and it was just a husk of the cocoon itself. And I panicked. I was like, "Oh no, I did something that's gonna ruin Angel's stuff, and he's gonna be so mad at me." And then he ended up finding her like just right next to where she was, but just on like the actual shelf. So we placed her outside, but she was like the prettiest moth I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was like a leopard print, or
she was like red and orange and had white spots all through her. And it almost looked kind of like a flame, the transition of colors going down from like a light yellow to like an orange and a deep red.
That is beautiful. Wow.
It was really cool.
Super cool. Yeah, I was going to say, like, if I could just imagine like her getting into Angel's closet and like chewing up.
I'd have to find a new place to live. Yeah. Like, that's what it would come down to.
Oh, exactly. And it would be something irreplaceable, like a Versace sweater from 1935.
Like, I don't know, like a 1932 Dior.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. 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 He's not, Margaret's not going to go for the cheap stuff. Don't think that. So. Well, that's good. I'm glad she's good. All right. Well, I think we're kind of probably wrap it up for you guys. I know this is just our little intro. So we're starting into Scorpio. So have a blessed Scorpio season, everyone. And we will come back. Great stuff from you guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, did we tell you about our astronomy adventure?
You did not.
So there's a club. What is it called?
So it's the Astrological Society of Las Vegas.
Okay.
Continue, Angel.
And I don't know if he was going to continue. So it was held in Death Valley, because I guess Death Valley is like the darkest area in the West Coast.
Okay.
So when you go out there, they have like two resorts and one kind of like gas station that was a little annoying because it was really bright with like fluorescence, but other than that, it was really dark, and the visibility of the stars and the planets was really good.
It was insane.
You were able to see like what did we see with just your, you know, without using a telescope, you could see Jupiter. I think I saw Mars towards the end.
We saw Mars. You could see Saturn. Thousands of shooting stars. Yeah. Pretty much every little constellation you can imagine. You could even see one of the arms of the Milky Way directly above us.
Wow, super cool.
So and then we saw like Sagittarius, which the guy said that was the reason why the Milky Way was so bright for us, is because
it was in the constellation Sagittarius. Yeah. I'm like, oh, look at me doing good work.
Nice.
So the drive was about 2.5 hours, but it was a cool experience, and the weather was perfect. It was not cold. It was just like the perfect. So we're going to try to go to more of those. There's another one next month.
And it's not as far away. The one that's next month, I think it's November 12th or something like that. Yeah. I believe it's going to just be about 20 miles outside of like northern Las Vegas. So not as much visibility, but still it's just cool to go. There's people who bring their $5,000 telescopes.
Yeah.
There was people at the event that we just went to that brought their entire computer setup, and they would point to something. They had like the lasers they could point in the sky and show you where something was. They would show you like a nebula. A lot of people had Jupiter in their focus, and then you could see Jupiter's four moons.
Yeah.
When you looked at Saturn, you can even see Titan, which is Saturn's biggest moon, sitting directly to the left of it. It was just insane to see like these nebulas and constellations, and it was beautiful. There's nothing quite like it, seeing it in person.
Yeah, that's super cool. So wait, do you have a telescope or did you?
So I do, but whenever I was living with my past roommate, she was trying to do me a favor by getting a lot of my stuff downstairs so it'd be easier for when I move out, because I was always staying at Angel's house. When she was moving it downstairs, I think that she may have just like accidentally knocked it against something. So one of the focus knobs, which is super important, it's very loose. I had spoken to somebody at one of our like Las Vegas astronomical things, and they said they may be able to help me fix it. So I just need to bring it into them. But in all reality, I'm trying to save up for this really, really nice telescope. It's like $4,000. So that's kind of like the goal I'm going for with that.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
You should start a Patreon.
Yeah. I'll start a GoFundMe.
That's a great idea. Exactly. So we'll get some support from the listeners for that.
Yeah, then that way we can come back and talk about all this discoveries.
Yeah, exactly. That is awesome. Very cool. So wait, did you guys, was that all the way into California, or was that the Death Valley?
Yes, so it was technically California, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say you'll go over the border for that, right?
Yes.
Does Death Valley extend into Nevada?
I believe.
I want to say maybe, because I know it's right on like that border of Nevada, California. I want to say it has to some extent.
I think it does, because I've heard them talk about Death Valley in Nevada before, as I recall. So
yeah, they have these really cool resorts out there. You essentially, there's nothing else for another, what, hour and a half? The closest thing would be like Pahrump, or... what's on the other side?
Big Bear, right? Isn't Big Bear going in that direction? Like if you kept going north? Or
yes, Mammoth, I think.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, looking at it, and it seems like it's right at the cutoff. Most of it, most of Death Valley is on the California side. There's maybe like a little piece on the Nevada side, but yeah, primarily it's over there. It's a California park.
Very cool.
But yeah, the resort was really, like the resorts around there were really cool. What else? That was pretty much all of it. But the experience, so everybody was really nice. And so the nice. Demographic was all over the place. There was people that were like really, really young. There were kids there. And then there are people that, you know, were a little bit more experienced.
Yeah, that sounds.
And what was cool is that those that are experienced really took the time to educate people who came there. Because I mean, just because you go to one of those events doesn't mean that you know everything about it. So there would be groups of like 5 to 10 people surrounding like one telescope setup, and they would just go over everything, like why Jupiter is as bright as it is right now, what's the definition for that, why does this happen, what are you looking at. Just different things like that. So I think that's always really cool because it could potentially grab one person's attention to maybe want to explore this a little bit more. That's just one additional person in this world that has an understanding of things beyond us.
Absolutely. That's an important thing. That's super cool. I'd love to see something like that. Maybe when I'm
we should all try to do something like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was gonna say. That'd be super fun.
Yeah, they encourage questions too, which is great. Cause then, you know, sometimes people could be a bit shy.
Yeah.
And then if it's a little too quiet, they would automatically just offer facts and
little bits of info and stuff.
That's we saw like a nebula, at that point it was a little bit windy. And since it's so dusty, my eyes were.
It was also too, so whenever you look at a lot of that stuff, like especially when you're trying to take images of like a nebula or a galaxy, you have to allow your telescope to sit there for a certain amount of time, and it has to stack image on top of image on top of image, and then you have to add the colors. And so when Angel had looked at it, it was like the raw image. So there was hardly any color. You could see like the faint blueness of the cloud, but they had posted that same image on the Las Vegas Astronomical Society's Facebook. And then I showed him, and it was like these deep, rich blues. Yeah. And so it takes a minute whenever you're doing that kind of like, I guess it would be considered astrophotography to some degree.
Wow. That's crazy. There's so much that I do not know about that. That's why I need to open up into that area and learn more about it and stuff. So very cool. I love it.
Well, you met me.
So we've got that resource now. So that's fantastic. I appreciate it. Thank you for sharing that stuff, you guys.
Oh, of course.
That's awesome. All right. Well, I will let you guys go. So anchor.fm/cosmiceye if you'd like to support us, or check us out at Angel on the 8th Day on Etsy. Or Cosmic Eye Tarot on Etsy as well. And you can follow us at AS0Trance for Joda, at Angel on the 8th Day for Angel, obviously, and at Cosmic Eye Tarot for myself. So Thanks again, everybody, being here. Appreciate you guys. And thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.